Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome back. It's Thursday, January 23rd.
Yep.
And Mia is here.
How about that?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
The same way as you are every day, which I'm grateful for.
Oh,
because,
really?
Yeah, with previous co-hosts, it wasn't always that certain or predictable, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do, right?
Wow, I can't, you know, I mean, knock on wood.
Yeah.
I've been able to come here like every single day. I haven't been even like late or not. I mean, I think like one time there was like an issue, but I still made it before the show was even like halfway
through. That's true,
through.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That was only that one time that was unusual. It was the traffic or it was your alarm clock, right?
Yes. That was the day my birdie clock broke.
Right.
Sad day. sad day. I freaking loved that birdie clock. And then it just did not chirp one morning.
Oh, wow.
And I was forever sad.
I know. That's like a nightmare, you know? I always have this nightmare that when I have to fly in the morning early, that the clock will not go off, you know?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But today definitely belongs to Justin Bieber.
Oh,
he's in the news. He's in the top headlines. And for those of you under a rock who have not woken up yet, he's been busted for pot, beer, and a yellow Lamborghini, resisting arrest in Florida, in Miami.
And smiling in his mugshot,
looking as good as ever.
My goodness. And, I feel like I need to, like, I just heard about the smiling mugshot. I'm actually going to look it up because I'm so desperate to see that right now.
Yeah, go to CNN.com. You'll see it right there.
All right.
And DUI charges. I mean, this guy is in deep doo-doo right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he was resisting arrest as well, you know, and they were racing, drag racing.
That little punk? And, come on.
Yeah.
I think he was just like pretending to, just so people would think he's like maybe like a little bit of a badass. Like, oh, Justin Bieber, he's so cool. He resisted arrest. That skinny little twerp. Come on, man. Grow up. Oh, yeah. Look. Oh, my God. Look at that little punk. Look at the look on his face.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
He's happy.
I can't even handle that. Check this out.
Yeah, he's very happy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What a little punk. He probably is so high, he doesn't even understand what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably effed up. He's like, paparazzi, picture. Okay. Like, he's no clue what's happening to him. He really doesn't.
Yeah.
That's something else, man.
I know. He told police he drank, smoked pot, and took prescription medication before driving. I mean, you know, how much more menace can you be to society than that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not even like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, it's, you're endangering others.
Right.
You idiot. Like, can you imagine, like, heaven forbid, but it's like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, so-and-so is, you know, killed by Justin Bieber.
Right.
Like, I mean, like, think about it, dude.
Right.
My God.
No, exactly. And you're high profile, you know. You got to watch what you do. But, you know, I think you get to the point where, you know, he's like so big right now that they feel like, you know,
they're... Yeah, he's like feeling invincible.
Exactly.
It's
exactly. And that
terrible.
They're above the law and stuff and nothing can go wrong for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I can understand that. You know, when you succeed in stuff, you think that, wow, you know, nothing can stand in my way and stuff. But,
right. Well, because there was another incident in his house and I guess,
right,
you know,
one
of his
throwing.
Homies got busted or something. Like... It was, you know, a bunch of like drugs or something. They put it on somebody else. Well, they were throwing
eggs at the neighbor's house. That's what they were doing.
Fucking punks, dude. Grow up.
Yeah, I know. So so that's him for that. Just one more thing before we get to the day's schedule here. I guess this couple donated sperm, right? And that's in Utah. Mm-hmm. And apparently they thought their daughter is the man's child, right? But apparently it's the sperm of a lab technician that worked at that lab.
No.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Whoa, man.
So wait, if a couple donated their sperm, was it a gay couple? So
No. It was a man and a woman.
Actually, speaking of gay, I have a story. Speaking of gays, never mind. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me. I mean, a story pretty much, you know?
Oh, okay.
I mean, the sperm was switched and they ended up with someone else's kid. And you have to wonder, you know, I mean, these people are crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what pleasure does he get out of that? I have no idea, you know, but people are whacked out.
Yeah.
Whacked out of their mind.
Jesus, I couldn't even imagine like all that. And then it's like, huh, yeah. Look what happened here.
I wonder how they figured it out, though, you know?
Oh, God.
Like one day you probably go, you know what? She can't possibly be our daughter. You know?
Oh,
so I don't know how that happened and stuff. But he switched the.
Wow.
The. Yeah. I guess his his widow, I guess he's not alive anymore, that technician. She says he was troubled, I guess. Duh, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You think?
Just a little bit, right?
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So what were you going to tell me about the gay couple?
No. I mean, they're not a couple. They're just friends of mine. It just reminded me. So yesterday, I'm out to lunch at Le Petit Four. You know, it's where I always go to meet my bestest friend ever, Joe. He's, like, awesome. So we're catching up. And then another one of our friends comes to join us, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just had, and I know he blasted this like all over Facebook, so I know he's not going to mind me telling the story. So he recently had vocal cord surgery, you know, and you really can't talk at all, which is unimaginable for him because he's just always got so really? Much to say.
Oh,
I'll have them on the show one day. They're like amazing. Like everybody will love to listen to them. So now he can talk, but like very, very low, you know. So the waitress comes over and she's, you know, trying to ask him a question. He's like, oh, he's like, I'm sorry, I can't, you know, you're gonna have to come closer. Like, I can't, you know, talk very loud. I had the surgery. She was like, oh, really? She's like, what happened? I'm like, oh, he's like, I had a, like, you know, vocal cord surgery, blah, blah. She goes, oh my gosh, Noah, are you serious? Good for you. And he's looking at her like,
good for you.
I didn't really have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, I had like a polyp thing on there or something. So uh-huh. I had to. Like, it was an awful surgery. I didn't have a choice. Like,
yeah.
I don't, you know, and then she walked away, and they're all, like, trying to, like, figure out, like, what the hell was that?
She was thinking, yeah.
Why did he think? So I thought, I'm like, well, maybe, because obviously she, like, you know, like, assumed that, you know, that you're gay, that maybe you had vocal cord surgery to make your voice sound like more higher, like more feminine or something.
You think that's what she was thinking?
And I have no idea. We were just brainstorming, trying to think, why in the world would somebody say, oh my gosh, that's a great decision. Good for you.
Well, maybe she thought he was practicing to be a better singer or something.
Yeah, and then know? After a while, then she kind of like came over and tried to like, you know, redeem herself. But it was just, I don't know, it was just kind of funny because he kept being like, no, like, this was like involuntary. Like, I had to do this surgery. Like, right. I was in big trouble and in a lot of pain, you know. And she's like, good for you. Oh my gosh. And I'm like, well
maybe just a ditzy waitress. What
didn't
could you do?
Get yeah. it. I don't know. But it was just kind of funny because he's just found that just so hilarious. So he like tagged me in it and like wrote it up on like Facebook wall and stuff.
Right.
So that's why I'm like, I'll share the story. He might, you know. He might want it on the air. He'd think it's cool, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, bring him in. Is he able to talk now, or?
Well, I'll wait till he can, like, fully talk.
Right.
Because he's just, yeah, he's got a lot to say. He's hilarious.
Yeah, it's probably tough. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. not being able to talk and stuff, my God.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, he literally had, like, Sharpies and notepads for so long.
Wow.
And I guess, like, he was saying that... the doctor said like he can't even like have sex, he can't masturbate, like he can't do anything,
really?
He can't exercise. Yes.
What the hell does that have to do with anything?
I don't know. But I had no idea that like the vocal cord surgery was that.
Maybe the doctor thought he was a screamer or something.
Like,
you know?
Right. And I guess what she told him, she's like, yeah, she's like, just be careful. She's like, unless you're a screamer, you know, or a heavy breather, just, you know, take it easy.
That's funny.
Oh yeah,
that's really funny.
Hilarious. I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure he'll love to tell us more about that when, when he comes on the air. he's just a funny dude. Yeah. I love it.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
So is he gay? I mean, is he gay?
Yeah.
Does he sound gay?
Yes.
He does. When his vocal cords work, right?
But yeah. Okay, he's still, you know, he still sounds, you know, about the same. Just right. A bunch of, you know.
Yeah.
A bunch of volumes down.
No, I mean, many of them do have their voice higher. I mean, it's, you know.
Right, yeah, yeah. And I think that maybe that's what she thought. Like, she's right. Like, oh, good for you. Like, right. You're, you know.
You don't talk like gay anymore?
Into a woman.
Oh, God.
Like, you know, just like, even like yeah. octaves higher.
Uh-huh.
You know, because he's still, you know, still like a dude. But right. I don't know how they get it done. So they can talk like a female.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Interesting people that you know.
For sure.
Yeah.
I love Hollywood.
Yeah, I know. I know. You can't argue with that, you know?
I know.
I mean, we've had these two photographers who are having the time of their lives photographing beautiful women. And,
Yeah.
Yeah, and what? We've
and
had
my
all kinds
crazy
of people.
Car
here.
Incidences.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I didn't tell you. So the other day, I had my car at the car wash, uh-huh. and it died.
It died in
again.
The car wash?
And they're like in the car wash.
Oh, my God.
They had to use jumper cables. And so I'm like, wow. Okay, so they got it started. And then I took it straight to my guys over at Phoenix, and they brought over a battery and changed it out in like two
right.
seconds. And
yeah.
now it starts like beautiful.
Yeah,
so
you needed a battery.
I'm
that
good to go.
Clear.
I really did.
I'm just
yeah.
surprised you waited until you get stranded. Car wash.
I know. Well, I did. Yeah. Well, whatever. Well, I thought it was fixed when they sprayed that stuff on it, and it was for a minute, but
right.
that still wasn't the problem. I mean, it helps, but I really did.
Yeah,
need
the battery was probably
battery,
drained already.
So.
Yeah.
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 Oh, well. Now it's fixed.
Yeah, good. So you were able to drive around again, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we have a very patient guest in the studio who is waiting patiently and eager to talk. And her name is Lindsay. Is it Syme or Syme?
Syme.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. Get close to the mic.
Hello.
And so you were like a last-minute guest.
Yeah.
Like the third choice, right? Or whatever it was.
Oh, boy.
I'm sure that makes you feel great.
No, I think it was just switching different
so
dates around. So,
right.
So, you know, her and then two other people with the same, like, PR company. And then they were just switching around all the dates. So I'm like, they're like, don't worry, we'll have somebody in there.
That's
I'm like,
right.
okay.
I'm the pinch hitter.
As long
morning.
As
great, great. Well,
as
you
long
can,
as they're great. So.
You saved the day, so yeah. we thank you for that.
Of
you
course,
know?
My pleasure.
So I would imagine you're an LA resident, right?
Yes.
Have you, I mean, were you born here? Did you grow up here?
No, I'm from Nebraska originally.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I've never met anybody from Nebraska. My God, there's
really?
Actually people living
I have.
Here.
Lots of people,
really?
Lots of cats.
There's a few people out here that I've met that are from Nebraska. Probably
oh,
about
really?
Four.
What?
Four, and now you're five. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a really strong contingency, actually. There's a lot of independent film happening there,
mm-hmm.
in Omaha especially. And
yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of connection out here. Between the Midwest and California.
Wow. So, I mean, did you grow up in a big city like Omaha? Or
Yeah, I grew up right outside of Omaha.
Okay, so it's not like a small town type of a thing where...
No, my dad grew up in a really tiny town out in the Panhandle and had that whole experience of, you know, he knew everyone. And
yeah.
his father was a pilot and they could land the plane right next to their house.
Whoa.
You know, in a field.
That's awesome.
I grew up
How cool.
in a city, so
uh-huh.
I had a different experience. But if you drove 5 minutes, you could be on a farm if you wanted to be.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah.
That's, is it like, I hear it's pretty flat, right? I mean, are there mountains there? Or?
No mountains.
No mountains.
We have, in the middle of the state and out in toward the western part, there are the sand hills. And it's
okay.
quite hilly. Where I grew up is... fairly flat, though.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty weird, because I've always been, like, around mountains and stuff. You know, like, I lived in Vegas. It's a valley, and we live here, and we've got the mountains. And so when I drive like up to Sacramento and there's no mountains there, it's really weird because you can see really far. You
yeah,
know?
It's like Chicago, Illinois. It's like cornfields for miles.
Right.
All flat.
My mother grew up in Indiana and they say always you can roll a bowling ball across the entire state. It would just keep
going. That's true.
Seriously. Huh? Yeah. Seriously.
Just from the momentum, you know.
Cornfields on cornfields on cornfields.
Wow. So, did you have a nice childhood? Do you have any siblings?
Wow. I did have a nice childhood, and I have one sister. She lives in New York. She's a writer.
Oh, really? Is she older, younger?
Oh, I'm not allowed to say at this point.
Oh, really?
She would kill me. No. we're really close in age. She's just a couple years older. And yeah, she's...
Well, we can't tell how old you are, so we can't tell how old she is. So that's
fine.
We have
a rule. People think we're twins, and we just let them believe that.
Oh, really? Wow, that's cool. So you look a lot like each other?
We do. It's polarizing. People either think we're twins or we're not related at all. But
really?
We do get it often when we're together.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So, by asking if you had a nice childhood, does that mean some people did not, you know? So
yeah, no, I did. My parents were both public school teachers.
And oh, really?
They built the house I grew up in, and I lived in the same house my whole life. So I knew all my neighbors and went to school at a fantastic school system. And yeah, I was very fortunate. Had a really stable, happy home, which is why I'm out doing crazy acting stuff now.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. So what were you doing there before you moved here?
In Nebraska?
In Nebraska.
I went to college at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and I double majored in acting and got my degree also in broadcast journalism.
Wow.
That's right, I'm a broadcasting professional.
Yeah, and two majors and everything. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, well, you came from an educated home,
exactly.
You know? Yeah.
That was a huge stressor in my family. A lot of importance was placed on reading at an early age, and homework was... number one priority. So.
Right. And it pays off in the end, right? I mean, as a child, you don't like it, but then later on, it makes you a better adult, I think, you know?
I mean, it takes all kinds in the world, and everyone has a different path, but I personally have found, I'm glad that I have certain habits and skills, and I love to read to this day, and I mentor with a group called the Young Storytellers Foundation, and we emphasize storytelling and writing and reading, and so I found ways to continue sharing that interest with others.
Wow. Yeah, tell us a little bit about this organization.
It's a wonderful group, Young Storytellers Foundation. That's the website as well. We go in twice a year, so once a semester for about 10 weeks, and there's a group of about 10 mentors and 10 students. Usually it's fourth or fifth graders, and we go into the LA public schools. And everyone gets assigned a child, and you're their mentor, and they're your storyteller.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Your whole job basically is to get them excited about writing a 5-page story, which we call a script or a screenplay, and they learn about like what's dialogue and what is a character, and they start to look at the TV shows and the movies they watch in terms of storytelling and as a writer from that perspective. And they get so excited and they realize the power of writing a little play. And then we have professional actors come in and they put it on for their whole school. And
wow,
it's so empowering for them. And they have so much fun. We play improv games. And so it's learning through fun. And then your whole job as the mentor is simply to be the secretary. We write down everything they say. Nothing is wrong. No bad ideas. And so they get really, really turned on to that whole world of they have the power and they can create something and see it perform for them. It's a really cool connection to watch them make.
Right.
Oh,
that's a great idea.
That is right on my alley. I need to join that.
It's 1 hour a week for like 10 weeks and then you take a break till the next semester. It's totally flexible. Anytime, like lots of different days and times and schools all over Los Angeles. I encourage everyone. It's such a low time commitment and it's such a rewarding.
Yes.
And I've met a lot of great friends doing it.
Oh my gosh.
It's really fun.
How did you get involved in that?
I actually think my sister was living in Los Angeles when I first moved here, and some of her friends, she's a groundling and she does connected in all in that world. And I think
What's a groundling?
The Groundling Improv School in Los Angeles.
It's really
famous.
Cool.
I didn't know that.
No, no, no. A lot of Saturday Night Live people have come from
Groundling. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much everyone you see writing or performing on a sitcom or any kind of comedy right now, someone is probably connected to the Groundlings in some way. She I think was performing in a show or someone she knew was mentoring and she got in. Kind of knew about it, and we went to the meeting together, and we both loved it.
Wow, amazing. So you still participate in that?
Yes. Awesome. This will be, gosh, I think this will be my eighth or ninth year doing it.
Wow, amazing, amazing.
And it's
nice.
Just grown and grown.
Yeah, I love when people like dedicate themselves to things like that, you know,
that
because
so cool.
There's no like any material compensation or anything, right? You just do it for yourself.
Exactly. It's so satisfying to do it. And I learn so much every time, too. And I get remind myself, you know, recommit to being excited about creating and being creative and being joyful about it. Because sometimes when you're really in the middle of the industry or working, it can feel like once in a while it can feel like a job. And you have to remind yourself it's a privilege and it's fun and it's play.
Right.
And the kids do that for me every time.
Yeah, I'm sure. And do you like to write as well?
I do like to write. Mm-hmm. And I always am also reminded watching the kids about why I'm an actor in the first place, which is my mother was a children's librarian in Southern California in the 60s. And so she was a really good storyteller. So growing up, she would read to us, of course, every night. And she had such a captivating way of telling the stories that it made us get so interested in stories and writing and characters and reading and all of that. And so it's just a circle, you know.
Yeah, it is. It helps that when the parents are into it as well, you know. And I know I love to read, and now my kids love to read, you know, in their 20s. And I think once you teach someone the importance of this before they even understand, you know, when they're like little babies, you know, you tell them the stories, they grow up enjoying it. You know, so
yeah. And
I totally can
their
relate.
Imaginations.
Right, right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah,
I
always used to love that in school. My teachers used to like use different voices for the characters. I was like, that's so awesome. That was like my favorite part.
Yeah,
of school story time.
Yeah, I know.
It's much more captivating, and I shouldn't say this, but than TV or a film. It can be to a child to have that interactive personal experience of them, you know, sitting on your lap and you're reading a story to them. That is so engaging. You
know? It is, and it's like a bonding experience too, you know. I mean, I know with my kids, it's like they know before they go to sleep, you know, when they were really little, they get to pick the book and, you know, we read a story, you know. So, God, I miss those days, you know. I mean, now they're like grown. They don't give a damn about me.
You
know?
Well, you can still recapture that moment by joining the Young Storytellers
Foundation.
That's
true.
Everybody check it out.
Yeah, tell people how they can join this if they want.
I believe the website is, you can just Google, I think it's youngstorytellersfoundation.org.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But if you just enter that in, I believe that's the website. But
yeah, Google is
YSF
easier. If you
and,
just...
Yeah, and there, you'll see it's so easy to join. I believe it's also in New York now, and it's spreading to other cities.
Nice. I'm glad there's people thinking about these things, you know?
Because
God knows I don't, you know? I wish I did, but I don't. I have other things on my mind. But no, this is cool, you know? And I feel I need to start... getting involved in things like that, because I think there's a lot of personal reward when you help kids like
that's
that.
That's the best. You're donating your time, you know what I mean, to like make someone happy.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
Right. No, absolutely. Just to interrupt for just a second, the headline came up, the Bieber bond is set at $2,500.
That seems kind of low.
Doesn't it? I mean, there's people that get busted for a lot less than this, and they put it at $100,000, $1 million.
Oh, that is screwed up. That is not fair.
I think it was a fix, maybe. Don't you think?
Somebody... Yeah, but I mean, who would go out on a limb and do this? I don't understand it. But
Miami just missed an opportunity to make a lot of tax dollars.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously,
but a lot of people are going to be pissed off. I mean, this is ridiculous, you know. But they probably figure he's not a flight risk or anything, so whatever, you know.
Right.
But he resisted arrest. I don't get it.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go back to this. So, so you went to college there, and how did the acting thing come about? I mean, did you have an inclination to? Did you feel you wanted to act from an early age? Or,
yes.
Yeah?
I did. And like I said, a lot of it I know just came from getting excited in stories as a child from my mother. And my dad was really key in that, too. He read to us a lot, too. But so I did plays as a kid. And then it just was a natural progression to study acting in college. But I also had... at the time, they didn't happen to have a film school there. Now they have a wonderful program at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. But the reason I went into broadcasting was I, you know, captivated by moving images as well. And I wanted to learn how to edit and how to, you know, what just the basics of shooting something. Very cool. And even though it was from a news perspective, and at the time, September 11th happened during my sophomore year. So that was, for a time, I thought that was so important. And I was, you know, sitting in the newsroom when it happened and witnessed it from that perspective. I thought, wow, I need to become a journalist. But I quickly was turned off from that because of then, you know, the resulting, all the media that happened. And I saw how it turned bad and all the replaying of the images and the stories. Anyway, that was my whole paradigm of realizing what it was I wanted to do, but the visual storytelling aspect and the power of the image and of the way you can edit something to tell a story.
That's what drew
stuck
you
with
to
me.
It.
Yeah.
Right.
So the two ended up being very helpful. I edit my auditions and my reels and stuff to this day. I feel fairly confident being an amateur, knowing just enough to get myself in trouble.
But that's good. That's really good. So you decided what? You're going to move to LA and pursue an acting career.
Yeah, I was so sick of winter that New York wasn't even on my register. I interned in New York one summer, and of course I loved it, but I was like, no way, can't do the winters anymore. So my sister, like I said, was living here. She worked for Sundance at the time, and so I thought it would be a great transition for me to come here, and she was here. And
so she had been here already, so
for a couple of years. Yeah.
I see. Okay, so wow, that's pretty cool.
It worked out.
So at least you didn't come here all by yourself.
Right.
There was somebody to guide you
exactly.
And all that stuff. That helps. Now, why did she move here? Also for the same reason?
Well, she had always. I think she just knew she wanted to live in a big city always, her whole life. And she had also spent some time in New York, but she got the job at Sundance right out of college. And so she was just gangbusters. And she didn't know a soul, and she was just really brave and just did it.
Yeah. Now, what kind of a job did you get there?
She was the international programs coordinator. So this was right before Sundance sort of exploded into what it is now, which is like, you know, really commercial and really A-list. And
right.
It was still really kind of cool and indie then.
Right.
And Robert Redford was really hands-on. And so she worked at the little office they used to have right on Olympic. And she went to Cuba and Spain and just all over the place, and she would help with all of the international filmmakers would have workshops or come to Sundance, and she would coordinate all of their projects and their travel and all of that.
Very cool.
Yes.
Very
her Spanish cool. came in very handy.
Yeah.
She's very good.
That's awesome.
Now, this is interesting, though, because your parents probably had different plans for you, right?
I think so.
Because most parents don't plan on their kids being in entertainment, you know? They want you to get a real job and stuff, but It's in the blood, right? I mean, when you're a creative type, an artist, it's in the blood, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do something else.
And they're so supportive. I think they
really?
Probably would have, you know, just for stability, they probably right. would have maybe loved us to be something else.
Right.
But they have never, you know, they have never missed a show. And, you know, they're so
wow.
supportive and they're our biggest cheerleaders all along.
Great.
It's a crazy journey.
So they didn't sit there and judge you and
no.
say you're being difficult or whatever, you know, being like
no,
not.
Never.
That's good. That's good. Because, and it's good because you pursued this, you know, you took it seriously. You went to college and then you moved here. And many people just think that, hey, you know, I'm an actor and I'm going to be busy. You know.
And that works out for some people. Like, it's, you know, it's a really unpredictable business,
really?
And people have all kinds of ways that it happens for them. I chose to get a degree first and kind
right.
of approach it that way. But I think if I hadn't done college, I might have had a harder time. My parents might have had a harder time with it.
Right.
But I think they appreciated that had an education, got
That's
two degrees,
true.
and then proceeded.
Mm-hmm. That's true,
just,
yeah.
Just because, you know, they are educators. But, yeah, you know, there's no one way to go about having this career.
That's true. So what was the first thing you did when you moved here? I mean, did you get a job or anything, or did you focus on getting publicists and agents? How does it work?
Oddly enough, I booked a movie back in Nebraska
really?
In the first year of living here, and it was my first full-length feature, and it starred Dave Foley and Leah Thompson and Patricia Richardson. It was called Out of Omaha. So that was really fun because I got to go home for a couple of months and
wow.
shoot a weird, wacky comedy, and they played my parents at the time. I looked a lot younger. And I got to learn from really amazing comedy veterans, and so that was really fun. and kind of strange to come very cool. So, full circle and come back home.
Right. But did that happen pretty much right away after you got here?
It had been a few months. Right. I did kind of what everyone does. I got headshots and I took some classes and I had some part-time jobs and went to little auditions that I could get for myself.
Great. So you did it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's just always hustle, hustle, hustle.
Right.
Even from the beginning.
Yeah, it doesn't come to you, right? You have to go out there and make yourself
and
known.
Meet people. It really does. The network networking is so key. And I'm still, I don't feel to this day I'm great at networking, but just as you're here longer and you meet more people and you work with more people, it just naturally expands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That some people are really good at it. There is such an art to it, especially now with Twitter and everything. It's its own animal completely.
What, like networking, you
yes.
mean?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Wow. There's yeah. an art to it.
I know. I need to start doing that. There's like all kinds of like luncheons and networking meetings and stuff all over the city, you know?
Yeah.
Sounds pretty interesting. So you met some people that way and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you feel you needed an agent at that point? Or were you able to get auditions by yourself?
It's always, I've had representation. I haven't, a lot of times, you know how it goes. It's just, mm-hmm. I've never stopped working for myself. That's the way I'll put it. I do feel the right representative is key to advancing. The wrong representative doesn't maybe hurt you, but you have to always be working, 99.9% of the time. You have to work for yourself and just keep going.
Right.
It has to be it's never been like, well, now I have this agent and they can just
and sit back and let them. No, it doesn't work.
Yeah, heard, you give them 10%. Well, it's because they only do 10% of the work.
And I like to be proactive. I want to be proactive. I want to be educated about all aspects of the industry and what I'm doing and who I'm working with. I think that's really key, or at least, that's the way it has felt to me.
Right.
Some people can simply focus on the work and the acting and that works out for them. I've always felt like I needed to work harder and know more about the business.
Exactly. Yeah. And work on your career and not just on specific projects and stuff. Yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah, it's like the best way to learn is just being on different, different sets all the time and just paying attention to, okay, what are the grips doing? Oh, that's interesting. Okay, checking the gate, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, most people think it has something to do with this, but it has something to do with completely different than what you think. Like, there's so much, there's so much that goes into it. People don't even realize.
And I'm kind of a dork because I love all that stuff. I love the process of filmmaking. I love being on a set and just watching, the work happen. And I could strike up a conversation with anyone on a set because I always find it interesting. You always learn so much. There's so many people around every time it's a whole different group and they have all different histories and experiences.
Right.
I think it's really fun.
Right. But you would suggest to aspiring actresses and actors to take charge of their career, right? Not just to hire an agent and think it's going to happen for them. We had the producer the other day and he was talking to us about agents and stuff and he says...
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, but he says, you can't rely on your agent because he's got like maybe a dozen clients or more. And to him, it doesn't matter which one gets the job as long as they do. And so there's kind of like they don't have your entire interest in mind,
Right. Yeah. He's just saying the difference between that and a manager, where a manager has very few clients that they put all of their hard work and energy into. And neither of them are anything alike.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think it's also really important as you're starting your career or any time in your career to create your own work, go write something and shoot something with your friends. It's never been easier and more attainable to get really fantastic, high quality equipment and to create something that's, a decent product. And it's easy to get it out to your friends on Facebook or YouTube or to a wider audience, like on Funny or Die or whatever, short film festival. Just go and do it because you learn so much and it all informs your acting and you might discover, I'm a really good director. I didn't even realize that I want to edit, something like that. And also, I think it's really important to always be in a class of some kind. Always be working on your craft and meeting people and just honing it all the time and challenging yourself. I study at Anthony Mindel's Actors Workshop, AMAW, on Melrose in Hollywood, and that personally has been a huge creative hub for me, and I really found my home when I found that studio. But you know, there's all kinds of really amazing teachers and studios in this town, and so go find one you love and go for it. It's really important to have a community.
Yeah. Sounds good. Now, you brought some notes with you, and I don't want to forget about all the stuff you want to promote. So let's get to that, and then we'll continue more.
Of course.
About how you've, you know, how you've built your career and everything. So you're working on some projects now? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Last year, I was in a film called Insidious Chapter 2 with Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne, directed by James Wan, and that was the sequel to Insidious. And it was a huge box office success. It broke all kinds of records. I think it was the second highest grossing film opening in September of all time.
Oh, wow.
And
that was what year?
It was just last year. It came out in September.
Okay.
And then it just was released on DVD in December. So that was a really amazing experience.
So we'll have to check you out with it. Yeah.
Well, I won't. It's way too scary for me. I won't go near
it
that.
Is very scary.
I'm such a baby. Oh, my goodness. I couldn't even handle it.
Well, watch out, because there's going to be a chapter 3. It's already been announced, so stay away.
What kind of a film? Is it like a horror film? Or what?
Yes.
It's really scary. Like, even like the previews, I'm like, uh-uh, no way. No way. I can't even watch like previews for this.
It's very well done. It's not gory. It's not a slasher. It's very psychological and just creepy and well written, and really messes with you.
Really? Yeah. Wow, I like that.
And it had an incredible cast. Like, really, really masters at what they were doing.
So you are in the sequel in part 2?
Yes.
Okay.
I played the young version of Lynn Shay's character from the first film. She was kind of the heroine of the first film and also the second film. She played a medium. And so I play her, a different version of her. So that was also really cool to meet Lynn and work with her and sort of get to continue a character that she had created and was still kind of playing with in the second film.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
That's awesome.
Very cool. So go on.
Yes. Well, and then I'm really, really excited. Insidious was amazing. And I'm really excited because I also did last year a film called Blackbird, which was an independent coming-of-age drama. And it was directed by Patrick Ian Polk, who did Noah's Ark, that series. Uh-huh. And it's basically, it stars Monique, and it's her first feature film at all since she won her Oscar for Precious.
Right.
And also Isaiah Washington is in it, and then some amazing up-and-coming talent. Julian Walker is the lead. And this was his first movie he'd ever done. He was local hire from Mississippi, where we shot it. They kind of plucked him out. And he is heartbreakingly, amazingly talented. Like, he's the full package. Just such a rare, natural talent.
Right.
But he plays a young man who is coming to terms with the fact that he's gay, and he's a teenager, and he's a small southern, really traditional religious town that he lives in. And so he has to sort of think through how this will affect his family and his community. And there's some really hilarious parts. There's some amazing music. These kids are so good in the movie. They sing and they play instruments, and it's incredible. And then there's some gut-wrenching parts of this movie.
Really?
But it's premiering on February 16th at the Pan African Film Festival, and it will be the closing night film. There's a huge gala, and it's really exciting. It's the world premiere. So there'll be the screening, a red carpet, a Q&A panel afterward, and then a big after party. And everybody will be there, the whole cast and all the filmmakers and everything. So
very cool.
I think it's, and it's an important story right now to happen, I think, especially, and I obviously can't speak personally, but I just, in speaking with my friends and people who worked on this project, for the African American community to have young gay characters in films to be role models, and to just that community especially, I think there's been a lack of acceptance or just those people represented. And so I think it's really important, and it'll be a really powerful film. So I'm really pleased to have a part in it and just to have had that experience.
Amazing. Do they let you get involved in the editing and stuff sometimes, or
Not in this case. They have professional people when you do your own film, right? Right. I don't think they'd want me sitting there. But I do happen to be really close friends with one of the producers, Keith Brown, and this was something that was a really important project for him to work on. So I've been a little bit privy to some of the back behind the scenes stuff a little bit more, and just so awesome to watch people champion a project and have it come to fruition and it'd be really exciting like this.
Yeah. Have you seen the finished film yet?
I haven't seen it. I've heard that it's great. I haven't seen it, so I'll be seeing it at the premiere with everyone else.
Oh, wow.
With sweaty palms. I always have a hard time watching for the first time.
I know. It's hard. It's hard. I mean, when we listen to ourselves too, it's, you become very critical of what you do and stuff, right?
Yeah. I never watch dailies or playback on set ever.
Really?
I find that
because it makes you crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it can make you crazy. It's like you try to second guess yourself, and after a while, you just, I think, lost in it, you know?
And that's the director's vision, and that's his job or her job, and I trust them completely. So it's in their hands.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So, how long did that film take to shoot?
I think it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks. We shot in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I wasn't there for the whole shoot. I was there for a couple of weeks of it. But they had just had a horrible tornado in the city, like right before, I think maybe a couple of weeks before production started. And it was horrifying. I mean, I'm from Nebraska, so we have tornadoes there, but I had never seen that kind of devastation. It was a direct hit on the campus and the whole town, and like just to see it up close. And of course, then it sounds horrible, but we were able to use some of those locations for the film, and it added something to the story.
Yeah.
But even just to walk around and just to see it up close, it's so humbling and overwhelming to see what nature can do.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Wow.
But it was that they were wonderful. The city was really welcoming, and Patrick Ian Polk, the director, that's his hometown. So
oh, really?
It was really cool for him as well.
So he felt comfortable there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It sounds so. A lot of people are making their dreams come true in this town. You know, you just have to find the right people to connect with.
Absolutely.
Wow. So then your sister decided she's going to move to New York? What happened?
Yes, back to my sister. Yeah. She is now, she writes and edits for the New York Post, and she's had some pieces published in the New York Times. She's a freelance writer also for Photers, the travel company.
Right.
So she's traveled the world, and she's always just been, travels like her thing, and
she's living the life.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Mean, wow.
She works really, really hard at it. I think we all do, but it's all very inspiring to watch her go after things, and it's always helped me to feel like I can do it too.
Right. And to see that she's also a creative, able to create things and write and it seems like you guys got a good foundation at home, you know?
I would say so. We have the best. Mom and Dad, I love you.
Yeah.
Best family, yeah.
Awesome. Aww. So what are you working on now? Is there anything new that you're working on?
Yeah, well, I have another film that I'm really excited to come out, and I have a small part in it, but it's a really scary, awesome movie. It's called American Dream. It was directed by Janusz Kaminski, and he's a 2-time Academy Award-winning cinematographer. And this was, I think, his fourth or fifth feature that he directed.
Uh-huh.
Written by Duncan Brantley, who wrote Leatherheads, George Clooney was in. Uh-huh. But it's a Russian mafia thriller, it's based on a true story. And it's so scary because it's so real, and you can really see how the characters, like, you think the whole time, I see how this could happen. They kind of get in over their heads, and they get drawn into this world of the mafia that they don't want any part of, and it's, you see, like, oh my God, this could really happen, or this, what would I do if this was me? It's, mm-hmm. I can't wait. It's been done for a little while, and I'm just, sometimes it just takes a little bit for a movie to get distribution and get released, but it's got a lot of cool people in it, and it's really well done, so I'm excited for that to come out.
Yeah.
And I shot just before the holidays a little really neat noir short that was all done completely vintage with like 30s stuff from the 30s clothes wardrobe.
Really?
They had amazing hair and makeup, and
oh nice,
it was really fun.
I love period
and they
pieces.
Shot it all on a green screen in a soundstage.
Uh-huh.
And we had some practical furniture and stuff, but this was the one exception. I did watch some playback because uh-huh. you're shooting all day long on a green screen, and they're saying this is where this is, and you're gonna, your eye line is here, and then you go back and watch the monitor, and the whole world is created for you.
Right.
It's incredible.
Amazing,
what
right?
we can
love that
do,
stuff. Yeah,
and
that's
instantly.
Fun.
Right.
So that was fun, and I had to wear, it was period wardrobe all the way down to the undergarments.
Really?
I don't know if your listeners have ever worn silk stockings from the 30s or garter belt, but it's an experience, and it puts you right in that era.
Uh-huh.
You walk differently. It was really drafty. Sound stages are always freezing cold. So that was, you know, got me right into the mindset I needed to be in. You feel a little more dainty when you're walking in those sort of like the corset and stuff.
Yeah. So do they make those? Do they make that clothing specifically for the film, or do they already have?
They
can just rent them, right?
From Warner Brothers,
right?
It's really such a historical value that we have these amazing wardrobe collections at the big studios because of these. I was wearing actual clothing from films, but also just from the era. And you think this is a legitimate piece of history, and it's really, really cool to have that stuff on you and have it inform your work. It's amazing what it can do. It's transformative.
Yeah, that's
it's like
awesome.
My bikini from Mad Men, which had absolutely no elastic on it at all whatsoever.
None of the good stuff.
It was not that was not that comfortable. I don't know how they wore bikinis back then. and also no toenail polish. That weirded me out. Like, I always need to have like pedicure.
Really?
Like, well, they didn't have toenail polish back then, and now we have to paint your nails with this color because, you know, the color you're wearing didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, it's
a lot of
amazing.
Things happen back
all
then.
All the way
yeah.
down to the, you know, little nooks and crannies.
Right.
It's amazing.
It's important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and I'm sure, you know, they were like probably not shaving their legs and stuff, you know. I mean, the thing is, it's different. Mm-hmm. Today, people take care of themselves. But back then, it was like, yeah, I mean, if you're wearing all these clothes, why shave your legs and stuff? But I think we've come a long way in that way, you know. I mean, is there any specific film that you would like to do, a specific situation that you're dreaming about?
Oh, I'm so hungry and eager. I've a long list of things. I mean, I'd love, like I mentioned, there's a chapter 3 of Insidious, and I'd love to continue that role. If I obviously have no input or control over, I think the script is being written, and it's, they're such geniuses. They'll do what, you know, whatever's right for the franchise and for the characters, but that would be really fun.
Right.
Just anything. I mean, I have such a long list of things I wanted to.
Really?
I'd love to do a Western. I've always wanted to do a Western.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to. I kind of. It's all about the characters for me, really, and the, you know, what I like to play people, real people, relatable people in relatable circumstances or extreme circumstances, and you and those characters that you really do can put yourself in their shoes and think, what would I do? Or God, you just feel for them, or whatever it might be. I love comedy too, but I there's something about the realism of it and the heightened reality.
Right.
You know, that really piques my interest.
Definitely. Well, this is cool. So, do you want people to find you? Are you on Facebook, Twitter? Do you have a website?
Yes, all of the above.
Yeah, okay, so let's hear them.
My Twitter is at LinzoSeim, which is LinzoSeim. And then
is that your nickname, Linzo?
My sister used to call me that as a kid. And someone else already had LinzoSeim spelled the right way on Twitter. So that was what I could get.
Uh-huh.
And then Facebook is just my name, LinzoSeim. And then my website is LinzoSeim.com.
Sounds
I'm
good.
All over the place. You can find
yeah,
me pretty
that's
easily.
Good. Today you've got to be everywhere.
Yes.
You can, you know.
It's so true.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely a lot of fun. You know, congratulations on your career.
Thank you.
And I know you're going to continue to do well and everything because you're well-spoken. You have, I think you have a pretty good idea what you're doing, you know.
Well, and I'm trying to make it look that way.
Yeah. Well, you succeeded in fooling us.
Yeah, it's a crazy business, but I love it so much, and I love to learn, you know, every day, learn something new.
Sounds good. LinzoSeim, thank you so
Thanks
much
so
for
much.
Joining us.
Such a pleasure.
A lot of fun, for sure. And Mia, what are we going to do about Bieber?
What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Don't look at me. He ain't my problem, okay? He's in Florida.
That's true.
That's a whole nother bag. But good luck with that, kiddo.
I can't believe he's in the front page, top headline, smiling from his mugshot.
Oh, Lord.
All right. Well, thanks, Mia.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you
tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.